Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. And today we have Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening guru, author of about 20 books and counting, and working on more.
I am, actually. So I've got one in the works. It'll come out in 2014. And Great Course is a new DVD set on gardening, some of the basics and containers. It'll be out in the spring of 2013. So.
And we've got a print of a really neat day today, don't we?
Oh, yes, we do.
We're in Eau Claire.
And we happened to meet, which is very crazy. I was in Minneapolis. You were here hosting another wonderful event like you're so good at. And
I tell you what, the gang here at in Eau Claire, the WPR gang, not the staff here, but also the listeners were just... We had a ball last night. It was so much fun.
I heard there's a lot of laughter. I know that's not hard to believe whenever you're in the room, Larry, but I heard it was a great time.
We had a wonderful time, and we're ready to talk gardening right now. And because we're in Eau Claire, we have a different number. And that number is 1-800-228-5615 or 1-800-228-5615. That's the number to call if you have a question for Melinda. You can also go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment or even a photo there. We'll do what we can to answer it. And again, looking forward to hearing from you. So give us a call. Shoot us a note on Facebook. Love to hear from you. And Melinda, oh boy, today, beautiful day.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And, you know, being here in northern Wisconsin, the trees, we were talking about the beautiful drive up. We were both heading north yesterday, and the trees leafing out, you know, the birches and the poplars with the light bark and that light green leaves, the red maples with the flowers and the leaves unfurling. It's like fall, only subtle. And the good news is it's the start of the season, not the end of the season. So it's just gorgeous. I think sometimes life gets so busy, you forget. And I just yesterday was so amazed at just how subtle, the subtle beauty of the woods up here and the landscape and the rolling hills. And spring is here.
Spring is finally here. And we have questions already. I know we had... we had a question from Stephen Baraboo.
Okay, Steve.
Let's see if I can get us to Steve. Hi, Steve. You there?
Hi, guys. You bet.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. So here's my dilemma. Over the years, I have started plants indoors under lights and been reasonably successful. This year, my wife told me that she had found some exotic impatiens that she couldn't find anywhere else and thought I ought to start those. And I did, and it was quite successful until I pulled them out from under the lights and started putting them outside during the day. Now, I haven't frozen them or anything interesting. Now, all the other things like the fancy snapdragons and, of course, the tomatoes seem to be doing reasonably well. But these guys are starting to yellow, and I'm wondering what it is that I'm doing or not doing that's creating this problem.
You know, one of the things is impatiens are very sensitive to cool temperatures, and I'm wondering it's not over yet. I got an easy solution. You look like the hero. Your wife will love you. You'll maintain your reputation. I'm a huge fan of a product called Rime, sold as Harvest Guard, Fast Grass, or Grass Fast. It's a product that lets air, light, and water through but traps the heat, and it's a great way to help harden off your plants, but also give them that little nudge. So your impatiens are outside. You know, I don't have a cold frame in my city lot. I'm not good at building things, so this is great. I cover my plants when I'm hardening them off or when I'm doing early planting, or even when I put my tomatoes out in the garden late May or early June, often I'll cover them through June because our nights are cool very often. Last year, unbelievable, and it really jump starts the season. So I would just get a hold of some of this. It's reusable. You can cut it to fit and see if that helps to keep them just a bit warmer, because when the soil's cool, the plants often don't take up the nutrients they need. And you'll see that with Calibrachoas too, which are those mini petunias.
Yeah.
A lot of times in the spring when our weather's cool, they often yellow up. And as soon as it gets warm, they pull up those nutrients and do much better. So just give them a little extra warmth and I think you'll be fine.
And thanks a lot for calling.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate your call. We had a Facebook question from Sue from the Madison area, who says, I've discovered hundreds of tiny volunteers where my wave petunias were planted last summer. Will they be anything like the real wave petunias, or an inferior variety that's not maybe worth saving.
You know, one of the cool things about gardening is all the surprises we find.
Absolutely.
And the seedlings of hybrids, as Sue's probably thinking, they don't always come true from seed. And so it will be a surprise. So part of the fun for me is seeing what happens. I had some petunia seed into the pavers in front of my house, and it looked really ridiculous, but it was great. It brought me great joy every time I walked by and thought, boy, those things were determined to live despite all the adverse conditions. So what you may want to do, Sue, is pot a few up or put them in an area where you can experiment and see. I had a dwarf Nicotiana one time, Nikki, that was 18 inches tall. I had a couple of offspring that turned out to be 3 feet tall and some that were 6 inches from that same parent plant. So if you want to get exactly what you want, then definitely start over with new plants. But, you know, sometimes petunias don't often reseed, and neither do impatiens. So when it does, it's kind of a fun thing in the garden.
Yeah, I'd leave them there soon.
Well, see, Larry and I are on that side of like, oh, what a great, cool thing. You can say, look, they made it in my garden.
And Larry in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Larry. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Good.
Good. Hey, I'm transplanting some upright yews. They're the size of about 4 to 8 feet tall. And I'm digging them up and stripping the dirt off. But I'm finding what looks to be a taproot. And, of course, I'm not digging them very deep. I'm only cutting it about 6 feet deep. Or, I'm sorry, about 6 inches deep. And then moving it over to a new space in my yard. And then I've got another question about yuccas, transplanting those too, whether or not they're gonna do well as well.
Well, one of the things with transplanting, you know, obviously the bigger the root ball, the better. But if you can't manage it and you drop it, you'll end up with a broken root ball and a lot of damage. So, you know, if you can get it a foot to 14 inches in diameter, and, you know, if you could go a little bit deeper than 6 inches, that would be great. You know, an 8 to 10 inch depth would be better. What I like to do is, you know, dig a little bit bigger hole, then dig back through. So the right size, undercut. A lot of times I'll take a loppers with me to cut any large roots, then slide like a piece of burlap or canvas, get a couple extra people to help. Anytime I've tried to do this by myself with a big plant, it usually ends ugly. And then put it over to the new spot. The good news is these cooler temperatures we're having now that are more typical Wisconsin spring are going to be a lot easier on your ewes to adjust to their new location. So post-transplant care is just as important as getting a good size root mass. So, you know, make sure you've got a good clean cut on that tap root. If you've, you know, whacked it with the shovel, typical way of transplanting, you're not alone. Just take a pruners and make sure you have good clean cuts on the roots. Get rid of any girdling roots and you should be fine. With yuccas, yeah, definitely those offsets, you know, digging, dividing, they are prolific. Sometimes the offsets aren't well rooted. So, you know, you may want to plant them a little closer than you normally would, and you can always move them once they're rooted if they all take. So, you know, good sun, good drainage, and they're pretty tough plants, so I think you'll have some good luck with both.
Yep.
Sometimes I'm not getting any root at all with that yucca.
Yeah.
Am I going to have any response from those?
You know what you may want to do, and this may just save you some work, is get some containers with a well-drained potting mix,
And
then place those. You may even want to put a rooting hormone at the base because that stimulates root development and discourages rot. And then put those in small containers where you can give them proper care. And then once they root, let's think positively, you know, you may plant up a dozen, and if half of them make it, it's a lot easier than putting 12 in the garden and getting rid of half of them. So, you know, the ones with no roots, I'd pot them up, put them in a sheltered location, keep the soil very slightly moist. You don't want to overdo it. And I think you'll be surprised at the luck that you have.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-228-5615. That's our new number today as we broadcast Garden Talk from Eau Claire, our Eau Claire studios. Having a great time there with Melinda Myers and me, Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in. And I think Annette in Manitowoc has been waiting long enough. Let's go to Annette. Hi, Annette.
Hi. Thanks so much. Well, I bought some property, and we have a plant on the property that I've been looking and can't identify.
Okay.
And it grows. I remember seeing it last fall when we looked at the property. It'll grow 6 to 10 feet high with big broad leaves on it. And the stalks can get to maybe 2 inches wide, and they're hollowed, segmented, reedy type stalks. And right now they're coming back like crazy. and I'm thinking we should grub them out because they're in places that they weren't last year. Do you have any idea what it is?
It might be Japanese knotweed, polygonum, been renamed. Some people are now calling it persicaria, and I'm giving you the botanical name so you can do a search. Some people call it wild or Mexican bamboo because it almost resembles that for some people. The leaves are more heart-shaped. The stems, like you said, are hollow. But you said they get 2 inches in diameter, though, huh?
Oh, yeah, and the stalks have little red specks on it, and the leaves are a darker green with a red vining. I have some in front of me, and incidentally, it's not poisonous to cats. Because somebody got to it before I could put it in a bag.
That sounds like my cats. They're alive despite themselves. So the leaves, are they heart-shaped? Are they long and narrow?
Yeah.
Are they?
No, they're more heart-shaped. They have opposite veins that are reddish.
Have you looked up? Okay.
The leaves get as big as your hand. They're real big.
That's big.
That is big. Do you remember it having any flowers or seeds last year when you bought the place?
No, it was towards the fall, so I'm thinking maybe that would have been done if there was any. It's coming out of the ground, and it almost looks like I had to look at it. I saw it, and I went, "Oh yeah, that's what those were." And I almost thought it was asparagus. It's spiking out of the ground.
Then it
blooms out. You know, then it reaches up and leaves out.
Okay, and I haven't looked at polygamy. Take a look at, if you do a search on the internet, do like an image search and type in Japanese knotweed or polygonum, polygon. Rubrum, I think, is the invasive one. And you're right, you do want to get rid of it. It's very hard to get rid of. I mean, several applications of Roundup sometimes don't control it. It seeds.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. It spreads. It's taking over. You'll find it growing along roadsides and ditches. So you do want to get after it. I would start there and see if it's that. Angelica is a native that can get big and has big leaves, but they're not heart-shaped. They're more dissected. So I don't think that's it. Check that out. And if that isn't it, maybe post a picture. I still owe some folks that were in Milwaukee with Larry and I. I'm still checking out your plant, Kathy. I need a little bit closer up picture. But if you can take a picture before the cats get at it, especially once, you know, the stem and the leaf, you can send it to me at melindamyers.com or post it with Larry, and we'll take a look at that. That might make it easier. But check out polygonum. Do a search, and I think you'll find. And it's just persistence. The rhizomes are hard to get rid of. You can dig. You can try solarization. Multiple applications of a total vegetation killer if you don't mind using that. But you'll hit it. Once it starts to regrow, hit it again. Once it starts to regrow, hit it again. DNR has a great website on invasive plants and control options.
Yes.
So that might be another place to check out, too, in case it's not this.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Melinda Myers, our guest today, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, author of more than 20 books, and she is the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Melinda Myers. Thanks to her, and thank you so much for listening in today. As I mentioned earlier, we're broadcasting from our Eau Claire studios, WHWC. Great to have the chance to do that. Talked with a great crowd of people last night. We had so much fun, and I'm enjoying my time, and so is Melinda. So you have a question, I'll bet. If you do, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. That's the number to call. And go to my Facebook page. Also at the Larry Mueller Show, you can ask a question there. And we have a Facebook question from Ellie. Are hydrangeas good to plant close to a house? How tall do they get, and do they need full sun?
Good question. There's a lot of different types of hydrangeas, and they're the hydrangea paniculata. You may know them as the PGs growing up. There's lots of new varieties out there. Some of them can get 12 to 15 feet tall, and they do great in full sun to part shade. But there's smaller versions like Little Lamb and Little Lime that are a little bit smaller, 4 to 5 feet tall, and about that wide. So you want to definitely give them room. The hills of snow or the smooth hydrangeas, the ones you may know as the snowball hydrangeas, sucker and run readily. And so those are kind of easy to keep contained. And they take a lot of shade and still bloom for you. The ones that our pink and alkaline soil and blue and acid soil need a little more sun, but really protection from the hot afternoon sun for the best results. Endless Summer is one that I think a lot of people planted, including me, and they didn't perform as well.
No, they were not as good.
Oh, I was trying to be kind, but Larry's absolutely right. So one of the keys I find is moisture, making sure they get sufficient moisture in the spring, and a little bit of a low nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer like a Milorganite seems to help with getting that phosphorus uptake and promoting bloom. And those two tend to be a little bit smaller, 4 feet, 3 to 4 feet tall and wide, and sucker also, so they're easier to keep contained. One of the things you do is look for the ultimate size of the plant. The roots aren't invasive, but you want to make sure there's room to get back there if you have to prune, do any maintenance, that it's not creating a problem. Because my theory is if you can't reach the plant, you can't maintain it. So if something happens, it's usually, wow, it's half dead. I never saw that because I never could get back there. So just make sure you have a little space between the house and the plant. Good for the house, easier for you to maintain, and better for the plant. Air circulation, light penetration.
And let's go next to John in Janesville. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Melinda. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for this program. So with this beautiful, warm weather we've had so early in the year, me and my family love to go asparagus hunting, and we kind of fan out and make monkey noises when one of us finds it. And I don't know. I think it might be early this year. What do you think?
I know a lot of people are harvesting asparagus in their own yards to extent. And it's, so yes, I think so. And it's going to be interesting to see. Do you guys hunt morel mushrooms also?
Oh, we love hunting mushrooms.
Okay. And you probably don't make noises because you don't want any strangers finding your stash, right?
Right.
I think you're right. It's been a really crazy spring because a lot of things bloomed early, but then it cooled off. So now we've got a lot of early bloomers and mid-spring bloomers. And, you know, we've got a lot of beautiful color in this nice compressed time frame because of the weather. So it's been a little nice. I mean, my crocus came up and they were done in a week. You know, it was so hot because when they came up, we had that 80 degrees. But then I've had other, my tulips are lasting a few weeks. My, you know, because it's been cooler now, you know, my Brunnera are looking really good. My Chinese forget-me-not. So things are, with the cool temperatures expanding. So I think it's time for you guys to get out and get hunting.
And as a matter of fact.
Oh, good. I knew Larry
would
know this.
Yeah, you're living in the Janesville area. And my next door neighbors in Madison, his home farm is in the Janesville area, and he's been out, and I know last week, a week ago, he already had some wonderful asparagus he found wild, and a couple of pounds of morel mushrooms, too.
Oh, so he found morels, too? Oh,
a couple of pounds.
Oh, the kids are going to love it.
Yeah, so if I were you, I'd be getting out there right now.
And so for everyone listening, if you see a family making monkey noises, you know where the asparagus is.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, appreciate the call. All right, Joya in Fitchburg, we will give you a chance now. Hi, Joya.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Melinda.
Good morning.
Thank you. You are right. This is a crazy summer.
Yes.
It certainly is.
I mean, I have two questions for Melinda. One is, I just got a tulip tree.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And planted it. But the tag doesn't say much. And the person I asked, she told me it needs 8 hours of sun at least. It's better in the internet. What I saw was it can grow on the shady part also. So I'm a little confused. And second is also what else in the like a dry summer sometime. What, you know, does it need watering every day or every other day? Or you know, she said don't overwater it. You know, that will kill the roots.
Right, and I'm guessing, I just want to make sure we're talking about the same tree. So the tulip tree, Liriodendron, is a beautiful tree, kind of on the northern end of its native area here.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Then we're talking about the same one. There's a beautiful specimen, a couple of them at Berner Botanical Gardens, one in full sun by the trial garden and one in fairly heavy shade in the woods. I haven't visited it for a few years to see if it's okay. They do best in full sun. A little light shade would be okay, but you'll get better bloom with more sunlight. Moist, well-drained soils. And here's the key. When we water, And you have heavy clay soils in your area or
Fitchburg.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I was listening, but I forgot. It's that too much information, not old age. Okay. Water thoroughly, but we don't want to overdo it. And with the cooler temperatures, this is a great time for planting trees and shrubs. Water thoroughly. So you're moistening the top 12 inches. And then before you water again, dig down about 4 or 5 inches and see about the soil moisture. And when it's crumbly, but slightly moist, water it again. So in heavy soils, that could be once a week, even once every 10 days. And especially if you've mulched it. In sandier soils, check it twice a week. It never hurts to check every 3 or 4 days. Now, it takes trees a couple of years to get established. So, you know, we often think, okay, we've got them in for a couple of months. It's good. You really want to keep an eye on it all summer. So if we have a dry spell, you know, even though it's been in the ground a couple months, make sure that the soil is slightly moist the first couple of years. So water thoroughly, but deeply and less often so that it's, you know, has a chance to be just slightly dry before watering. That'll get it established. Good proper watering and mulching. 2 inches of a shredded bark around on the soil, not piled up against the trunk of the tree, will keep the grass away, will help insulate the roots, will help conserve moisture, better for your tree. And those two things are really the key to success with growing trees. So you're, and thanks for planting a cool, if you have, for those that haven't seen a tulip tree, check it out. They have beautiful flowers. You know, the sepals persist. It's just a really cool and very different tree.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Joy, for calling.
One more question, quick question.
Okay.
About the turcap lily. I had a turcap lily about 2 years ago. It bloomed and nicely. And last year, you know, it didn't come up. So I don't know what happened, whether the rabbit got it, mole got it, or, you know, and the, you know, I was at the garden show, and they, one of the person I asked, and she said, you know, wait, it may be still hibernating underground.
You know, well, it's always good to wait. This crazy weather, who knows? Rabbits and deer love lilies. It's like candy to them. And so if they did munch and do a little munching, it may take your plant a while to come back. I just kind of mark the area and work around it. You know, sometimes with crazy cool spring, warm and cool, sometimes plants pop early, sometimes they're delayed. Also, lilies are scaly bulbs. And so with if it's in an area that's poorly drained, you may get some root rot too. So I would wait. You know, I'm a very, procrastination sometimes pays, and this might be one.
It might be one. You know, we have a couple of small gardens in the front of the house that are, and the one side is daylilies, which are doing great, and on the other side are some really expensive plants that have really spent a lot of money on, and of course, they're not up yet.
I was going to say, the daylilies are probably doing great, and you're watching every day, you know, is my investment paying off?
Oh, and so these very expensive hosta varieties, but actually, we sort of dug around, and they are, they're there. They're just coming slow. So, Joya,
be patient.
Have a little patience.
And you know, the other thing, you bring up a good point besides the financial investment that makes us all nervous. But even in a small yard, the microclimates can be great. Mm-hmm. You know, I deal with my leaves constantly in the fall, and I don't know where they come from. But some blew in late in the fall, and I'm just slowly cleaning them out of my bed, uncovering. You know, I have hostas that are peeking through the leaves and some that are fully leafed out. Differences in varieties and a little difference in the fact that those leaves didn't get off as quick as the other leaves to warm the soil. So.
Yeah, and on the one side, there gets a little more sun than the other side, and there's a hosta or two in that bed, and they're up and 6 inches
and
high.
And they were probably the cheaper ones, too.
They were the cheapest.
I know. So everybody out there is going, I know. I feel the pain.
We had an email from Kristen who says, I have a 5-year-old lilac tree about 78 feet tall, doesn't have flowers, never has had flowers. And it's 5 years old. How many years does it take before it will flower, or is something wrong with it? It's been growing well, nice and green, though there are some leaves that are curled with dry dead spots on some. Maybe it's diseased, or maybe is it bad genes?
We could always blame bad genes, but, and I know where you're probably thinking, well, first of all, is it in full sun? Because lilacs do
the best in full sun.
And a lot of times when we buy our shrubs and they're blooming, they're in a container. And so those roots hit the side of the container. It sends a hormone message. I'm mature and they flower. We put them in the soil and they spend a lot of their energy putting down roots. Great for the longevity of the plant, frustrating for us as gardeners. So what you want to do, you know, soil test always lets you know if you need to add any nutrition, any certain nutrients to the soil. We typically have high to excessive levels of phosphorus and potassium in our soil, so adding more doesn't really help. There's been some research. Jeff Gilman out of the University of Minnesota just published a new book on, and I can't remember the name. It's just out. I don't have its newest one. But talking about, you know, with fertility, a little bit of nitrogen is sometimes helpful with the plants in making that phosphorus more effective, even more than we realized. And I think I've mentioned here before that they've done research on milorganite, and they found that when the micronutrients work on the milorganite, it releases the phosphorus and potassium, some of it, in the soil.
Yeah.
Phosphorus is good for flowering without adding more to the soil. So make sure it's in the full sun. You may want to have a soil test. You should start seeing blooms soon. And the other thing with the curled leaves, there is a bacterial blight that does hit lilacs. It almost looks like your leaves have been treated with a broadleaf weed killer.
Yeah.
You know, that same distorted look. So if you think that's the case, the Extension Service has a great publication in their X-Files on bacterial blight. Prune, disinfect your tools between cuts. So prune out the infected branches. Often that's enough. So, you know, I think just minor pruning right after it should have bloomed, but don't prune any other time of year. You know, don't prune in the fall. Don't prune in the winter, or you're pruning off the branches that are going to flower. So just right after bloom, or should have bloomed, until you get into that flowering mode. And after that, too.
And speaking of pruning, JT and Cameron has a pruning question. Hi, JT.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a simple question, at least I think it's going to be simple. I have potentillas out in front of my house, a couple of them. They've been established for about 10 years. They do well. My problem is I didn't get a chance to prune them. Is it too late to prune them now? They are starting to leaf out, but they're getting pretty unruly.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question, because I've been hearing that quite a bit this spring, because the normal time for pruning, things were growing already. The downside of you can do that, and that's not a problem. The downside of it is that it's put energy out in those leaves, so now you're pruning it, and they'll just have to stick more energy in. If they're in full sun and well-drained soil and doing great, they will recover. With potentillas, for people who are tired of, you know, that floppy growth of potentillas in the summer blooming spireas, cut them back halfway. Then take half of those big fat stems, the older stems, right back to the ground. Then what happens, you get new growth off of the old stems as well as from the ground. So the old stems help provide some support. So that's a really good thing to do. So, you know, you may want to try that, because potentillas, all my students, when I used to teach, you could tell who did maintenance. We'd come up to potentilla and there'd be this real big groan, because they get floppy, and we often push them into heavy soils and shade, and they look ugly. So doing the pruning method that I mentioned, a little more putsy than cutting them to the ground, but you'll have a little more stiffer, sturdier, better looking plant. So yes, you can go ahead and do it. You know, it was a weird spring. So as long as they're good and healthy and they're established plants that need pruning, they'll be fine.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, callers online here. Let's go to Chad in South Range. Chad, are you there? Hi, Chad.
Hello, Chad.
Well, let's see. Yeah. Well, first, I need to first I need to turn the volume up. Then Chad can talk. Okay, there you go. Thanks for calling.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Just wanted to make a comment on the bamboo. I'm from South Range now, but grew up in Altoona, and the neighbor had given my dad some of these plants when they had first bought the house.
Oh.
And we have been fighting this for over 30 years.
It's awful, and it's not a true bamboo, but thank you for mentioning that. And it is awful, so you're right. She needs to jump on board right away if that's the problem.
I remember being kids, we would dig the soil out along the house, and these things get as tall as the eaves on the house.
It is truly. I walked into a property in Milwaukee one time. I went, wow, what is that hedge along the back? And walked up close, and it was these. They die back in the winter. It was a thicket of stems. So thank you for sharing that. So, yeah, and they seed so readily, and the birds carry the seeds, and
it's a mess.
It is. So
they'll go right up through plastic, rock, right? We've done it all.
Oh boy. Okay. And so you've been digging, and have you been using Roundup also, or what have you been using?
Yeah, that's what's kind of been working on them lately, is just some good Roundup and keep
persistence.
Persistence.
But like I said, we did it many years as children. That was our job to, you know, clean it out.
I can see this is a mission. I know we all have our missions in life, and I can see why this would be yours after 30 years of digging. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Doug in Trevor, Wisconsin. On to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering about, there's herbicides. I don't use them. My neighbor does, and they're like leaching over into my property. I have asparagus bed 2 feet away, and there's nothing growing about a foot away from my asparagus bed. And I'm wondering, is there some, could I plant something that would, you know, absorb that herbicide and I could pull it up and burn it or something like that? Or is there some kind of plant or plastic or something that could stop the herbicide from coming over? I put a lot of labor and money into my asparagus bed, and I'm concerned about, you know, the effect of this.
Well, and plus, you know, you're gardening probably so you can control the inputs into your food, too. So what you may want to do, and, you know, I'm just thinking of physical edging and then grass or something, any kind of planting that would intercept it before it gets to the asparagus bed. Something, grass may be an issue for keeping it out of your asparagus, but some kind of ground cover. Because with the leaching, it's basically what you're trying to do is stop it from rolling down the soil. And typically your herbicides aren't going to move several feet if there's something stopping them. So if they're using a broadleaf weed killer, a grassy plant will survive. If they're using a grass killer, a total vegetation killer, they're going to be killing everything. I know that it's... I know those issues with your neighbors can be very delicate to deal with, and I don't know if there's any way you can work with them. You know, if it's an overhead spray, you know, if they're spraying on a windy day, any physical barrier, a fence, any kind of fabric, you know, something that might be a little decorative that would physically keep it from spraying on. And then I think a planting of sorts that would intercept anything so that it doesn't roll down the soil. I can't even think of anyone that, you know, the Department of Agriculture used to deal with some problems like this, but I don't know if they have the resources anymore to do that. So, if I find anything, I'll let Larry know. I'm just not aware of anything, and I don't even know who we would send you to. So I think a physical barrier, if it's overhead spray, and then plantings to intercept it before it gets to your asparagus will get you give you the best chance. Good luck, and maybe have... You know, a nice beverage with your neighbor one day and see if you can chat about some maybe a little more cooperative efforts. There's some new eco-friendly products out on the market, too. The chelated iron, the Heta iron, which is great. It's more eco-friendly that, you know, you might want to see if you can convince them to do that, at least along the property line.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. An email from Ken in Mount Horeb. His poplar trees have black tips on the leaves. Wondering what to do or what that is.
Well, one thought is frost damage because, you know, we had a lot of leafing out. You know, when plants are in bud stage and we have below zero temperatures, they can tolerate. But when those leaves start opening, if we get a cold snap, we'll often see tatters, which are holes in the leaves, and we can see even some frost damage depending on. So that's one possibility.
Yeah.
So I would monitor and see, is it getting worse? Then it's probably a disease problem. If it's like, okay, 25% of the tree is affected and it looks the same 2 weeks later, there are some leaf spot diseases that will hit poplars, but it's pretty early that I'd be surprised to see that. So I would monitor, you know, kind of keep an eye on it. I'm going to give this one to Brian Huddleston when he's back on. If it's progressing the next time Brian's on, you might want to call in. There are some leaf spot diseases, but not really practical to treat anyway. And usually poplars are tough enough that they'll tolerate it. So what I would just suggest is monitor proper care. And I think it's probably more of a response to the weather, but keep an eye on it.
There we go. Let's go to Charlotte in McConnell, Illinois next. Hi, Charlotte. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Charlotte.
Hello there.
Hi.
Last year, I talked to a master gardener on a Cedar Rapids, Iowa station. I asked them about the daylily leaves that come up all stunted and twisted and almost like you stepped on them in the middle. They kind of spiral out. She said leaf streak, if you have streaks, colored streaks in the leaves, it's not fatal. And I said, no, they're stunted when they come up and they twist out sideways. and in the if it does flower, the flower stems are real short. The last two or three years in a bunch of cultivars. And then she said there's something new called spring sickness, and they don't know what causes it. So she recommended digging it up and throwing it away. Don't compost it. And I've never heard of it, and I've had this about going into the third year now. Some of them are doing it this spring. It has nothing to do with the frost and all that, you know,
right.
Really. And I didn't know if you had any information on it or not.
Do they outgrow this, or they're twisted and stunted the whole season?
They're twisted and stunted the whole season.
Boy, that sounds really viral, like a virus, and especially since the flower stem is short.
And it's different varieties. It's not just in one variety.
Which makes, which I would suggest, it sounds like
it's in the soil.
Yeah, and viruses can spread from one variety to the other. And you're doing all the right things in terms of trying to figure out what's wrong with it and a great description. Mm-hmm. What I would suggest you do, since it sounds like you have a lot of daylilies, is I would send a sample in to the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic because they can diagnose it before you dig everything up. Because if it's a virus, usually it's about getting rid of those plants, not putting susceptible plants, more daylilies, back in that area. And some viruses are carried by aphids and other insects. So even if you had daylilies in the back garden, you know, if the insects feed on the sick plant, they can carry it to the healthy ones. And, you know, I hate to say that your daylilies are done for, but I would have it tested so that if there is a problem and it's contagious, you can get rid of those and not infect any others. And then also get a recommendation. It's usually several years before you can put something back into that spot. I know. I'm really sorry to tell you that. I haven't heard of the spring sickness. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of an odd name. She said the experts do not know what it is or its cause and are now working on the problem. I got in quotation marks.
Okay. Well, I love the definition of decline is we don't really know what's causing it, but it's not doing well. So I think that might be that spring sickness, too. And that's why I ask if it got better, because there are some viruses, like there's a tomato ring virus on clematis where the leaves look yellow. But then as the weather warms, it masks the symptoms and it's not a problem. But the plants look normal. That's not happening for you. So that's why I think you really want to get, you know, it's worth the investment to get it tested or dig them all up, get rid of them so you don't infect the good ones that are left, because I'm really concerned it's going to infect your other plants.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wish we had better news for you.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based garden expert and author of more than 20 books and host of Melinda's Garden Moments. Our guest here on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Melinda Myers. We're broadcasting from our studios, our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire, WHWC. The gang here has done, been so nice. It's been a lot of fun, and we have some great listeners who've come in to take a look, too, and that's fun. And one of my old compatriots, Bob Bozold from Wax Radio in Eau Claire, he and I have done a few things together, and he stopped by to say hello, too. So, Bob, thank you.
You bring an audience wherever you go. Yeah. I turn to look out the window, and there's a crowd watching Larry. I'm like, wow.
That's nice. That's really
is
nice.
Very fun. We have company this morning.
We got some company. But they are on the other side of the glass, so they can't ask any questions. You, as you listen, can ask questions. Just call in at our Eau Claire number, which is 1-800-228-5615. 228-5615. Be glad to talk with you. The other way to do it is to go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And of course, we would love to hear from you. And Valerie in Marquesan up next with a question. So let's go there. Hi, Val.
I'm a lazy gardener.
All right, I can relate already.
I live out in the country and with wind and whatever. I have so many dandelions. I'd be a billionaire, you know, if I could sell those things. I want to know, if I can kill, at least around my actual landscaping and my bushes, can I, spray them with Roundup and then just cover it all up with mulch?
Okay. that's a great, you know, that is, it is kind of the, I'm thinking of my yard too. I've got a lot of dandelions. I think this is the gangbuster year. I remember another one when I was with the city and we had a record bloom. It was a bad year, let me tell you. One of the things, you know, getting the flower heads off definitely reduces reseeding. Spot treating with Roundup will kill the plant, but you want to not do that in your lawn. Every time I walk, drive through a neighborhood, and I see somebody with a bottle of Roundup with their dandelions, I think they're going to call and say, my husband or wife went out there with the Roundup, and now we have all these dead brown spots. But it sounds like you're talking about in your flower beds or your planting beds. So just protect your good plants. You know, one thing you can do is take a milk jug, cut the bottom off, put it over the dandelion spritz. You can use a sponge brush and wipe it on the leaves, which I really like because you're putting it right where it belongs, and they'll die. Mulching just covers up the dead plants, but it also helps with any seeds. Ohio State University did some research and found that using mulch was just as effective as a pre-emergent herbicide. Now, what you may want to do, and you're on a farm, so you may not want to invest this much in controlling the dandelions, but for people with maybe smaller spaces, corn gluten, okay.
I've heard of that, and I don't. You can't buy it anywhere.
Well, I know a lot of the garden centers are selling it as one of the product names is Amaze, and mm-hmm. if you find that, usually the other brands are nearby. You apply in the spring and the fall. And after 3 years, they found an 85% reduction in weeds. I used to think it was 50, and just some research out of Minnesota has found 85% reduction. A little bit of nitrogen in there, so you're getting some fertilizer as well. You might need to just call around. You know, I'm kind of spoiled being in Milwaukee, so I have a lot of choices, and I know the garden centers in my area are carrying it. But corn gluten is the active ingredient. And so two applications, one in spring, one in fall, for 3 years, you'll reduce the, you won't kill the existing weeds, but it'll prevent their seedlings from coming up. Let your grass get established, mow high, mow often, so that you're not taking a lot of the top off. And fertilization, one fertilization a year can greatly reduce your weed population just by beefing up the grass. So, you know, that combination. But yeah, as long as that Roundup doesn't hit your good plants, you're fine. And then mulching is always a good idea, good for the plant health and good for suppressing weeds.
And thank you very much for your call. Appreciate your call as well. And you can join us at 1-800-228-5615. Let's turn to Aaron in Manitowoc next. Hi, Aaron. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have actually two questions. I started a bunch of peppers and tomatoes, different varieties, hot and such to plants from seed, and I'm wondering what I can put on them. I don't use any; they're all organic, basically. And I'd like to, you know, get them to grow a little bit faster if I can. And I'm just wondering what I can put on them. And my other question is I made some planter boxes to put on my fence. And I'm going to be planting vegetables in them, and I'm wondering what I should use to types of soil and mixture that I should use to be able to keep the moisture in.
Okay, a couple things. If you're doing any worm composting, or you can get a hold of worm castings, I've used those on seedlings and had really good luck. There's some nutrients in there. It's organic, so that's one option for you. And it depends. You know, if you're putting your food scraps in, you know it's truly organic. We all have kind of a little bit different definition of what organic is. So worm castings are an option. Some people are using compost tea, which is diluting it by soaking the compost. There are these brewers that you can get which oxygenate. But, you know, even just the old-fashioned soaking a bag of compost, stirring occasionally, you know, it will give you some very low level of nutrients. For potting mixes, there are more and more potting mixes that are considered organic and classed as organic. You know, I used to mix my own with topsoil, and I'd use some kind of compost, either mushroom compost or something I had created. But I found it hard to get good quality topsoil, and you don't always know where it's coming from and what's in it. So you might want to look at one of the organic potting mixes. Adding a little compost, mulching. I mean, we don't think about mulching containers, but that does help hold the moisture in as well. Milorganite's an organic nitrogen, but it's not classed organic. It is a biosolid. But there are some organic fertilizers out there. Just read the label, because they're not tested at a level that other products are. So you may want to just kind of check carefully. If you're doing composting, working that in with your potting mix that you buy is a great way. A lot of times I'll do that, because that seems to really help hold that moisture. A lot of the newer potting mixes I'm finding tend to dry out pretty quick. So I've been adding some compost to them just to help with that moisture retention. And then that compost will have a little bit of nutrients, and then you'll probably have to supplement as well. Again, looking for an organic fertilizer that fits and matches your needs.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you very much for calling. And, oh, lots of callers. Let's go to Mary in Dodge County next. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about an outdoor amaryllis. It must be very old, because the lady that gave it to the family has been dead for many, many years. But there's all these beautiful leaves, you know, and they're way too thick, and I'm wondering when a person should dig it to transplant it. It seems like I've seen blossoms in the area later in the season, like you don't see the green leaves, but it shoots up a stem and you get a pinkish blossom.
You bet. Sometimes called autumn amaryllis, naked lady, resurrection lily, or surprise lily. It's really a lycoris, L-Y-C-O-R-I-S, but often called autumn amaryllis, and you described it perfectly. Big strappy leaves. If you dig them up, there are bulbs underneath. Those leaves will last for about 8 weeks, die back, go dormant. And then in late August, early September, it sends up a stem with blooms. You described it perfectly, pink, lily-like flowers with no leaves. So it's kind of fun. That's why they call it surprise lily, because it just is kind of a surprise, even if you know that it's there. You could, as the leaves are declining, it's a good time to find them so you know where they are. You could dig them and divide the bulbs if you think it's overcrowded. And then they're kind of borderline. They're often rated as a zone 6 hardy plant, but I know gardeners like you that are growing them in Wisconsin quite successfully. I have one in my yard, and as crazy as it sounds, it always surprises me when it comes up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot it was there. So, you know, if you don't have room for more, you might want to share or trade with somebody. So, yeah, after the leaves start to decline, that's a good time to dig them, divide them, replant them. And they may or may not bloom for you in the fall. Probably will, though. That'll give them a chance to get reestablished. So good luck with
there
that
you
and
go.
Enjoy.
Thank you for calling. And Ted in Waupun. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I listened to a show a couple weeks back about someone talking about growing lemon trees.
Yes.
Oh,
and for the life of me, I cannot find a lemon tree. I've called different garden centers, and just wondering if you had any ideas on where I can go next.
We talked about lime trees as well, bears.
And you did, yes. And actually, what I'm looking for, I was more interested in the Eureka lemon.
What I would recommend, I know Monrovia has been doing more work on citrus, and garden centers that carry Monrovia, they're in the green pots with the gold Monrovia tag, you might want to talk to them, because sometimes what they're willing to do, I can't speak for them, is if they're getting a shipment of shrubs in, often they can order a few, have them put on the truck and sent out. I know Steins has had some in the past. I've picked them up on the road. I heard Patty speaking on the limes, too, and I was like, I came in halfway through, and I was going to call her and go, can you just, like, write that down, and I'll put it in my e-newsletter and credit you so everybody gets that, because I'm sure it's archived.
Yes,
on your,
it is.
Because,
right.
So you might want to listen in. But I would say if you have a garden center you work with, I know Steins was going to order some.
And I do, and I've talked to Steins, and they say they don't carry them, and I've talked to
I was whining to them. I'll whine a little louder. Okay. I don't know if it will. You know what? If you email me, send me your email contact, and I'll forward it to somebody that may. I don't know if they can help you, and I don't want to put Steins on the spot. But
no, and I really didn't want to either. But
you know what? Hey, let's take advantage of this relationship.
<That's right. laughs>
So,
why not?
And I don't know if they can get a Eureka, but I will forward it to Angie in the corporate headquarters. I just answered a question for her, so we'll do a little trading here. But yeah, you know, and I picked up one in the UP of Michigan. So I'm lucky enough to travel, and I'm seeing more and more out there, but they are hard to find.
Yeah.
Logies, L-O, and maybe Logies, L-O-G-E-E-S. they will have them. They're a mail order company.
Yeah.
And, boy, once you get on their list, you will get catalogs at least once a month. They have all kinds of edibles, figs and citrus and tropical plants. And his catalog is beautiful and the website is good. So if you need to mail order, I check them out because I know they've got the citrus. And they probably would have the Eureka, too.
And I have yet to order them. My wife's saying, where are those Bears limes that you were ordering?
Maybe we all need to go together and get a truckload and sell them on the roadside, Larry. Because I know Patty got me so excited. That's why I love listening to the show, because I always pick up something from the other guest you have on.
Oh, I was so, I so wanted those. And I haven't, I just haven't gotten to order them yet.
I know. It's probably good anyway. You've been traveling a lot. You've been busy.
Yeah. And here we got One Day Wednesday coming up in just a few days.
Oh, excellent.
And listener, we can use your help as you listen in here. If we could get 500 pledges in the door before Wednesday, we'll be able to wrap up the usual five-day drive in just one day of on-air pitching. So I hope you will cast your vote for shorter pledge drives. Make your gift early to set the stage for a very successful One Day Wednesday. And it's coming up in just a few days. Go to WPR.org and make your contribution there. And thank you very much. Larry Mueller here with my guest Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening guru, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, broadcasting today from our Eau Claire studios. WHWC, the gang here has been really great, and we've had a wonderful time. I had a great evening last night and having a great time today with Melinda Myers, who has joined us from, she's our Milwaukee-based gardening expert, and she was in Minneapolis last night. That was, talk about a coincidence.
I know. It was meant to be. We haven't been lucky enough to be in the studio at the same time. And so when I found out you were here and Judith called just going, well, maybe she'll make the drive. I'm like, I'm closer. So this was great. I could sleep in a little bit, head down the road, look at everybody going north. And I was going south, a much better direction to be headed on a Friday afternoon.
Well, we're having a lot of fun. And if you have a question for Melinda, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is... Let's see, I've got to get it right. 1-800-228-5615. 1-800-228-5615.
After all those years of your other number, you're doing a great job there.
I have to look right at the number to say it, because otherwise I'll give the other number. And we have Carolyn in Wautoma with a question for you. So let's just go right there. Hi, Carolyn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Melinda.
Good morning.
Good morning. No, it's afternoon.
I know. I was hoping you wouldn't notice. Need another cup of coffee, I think.
Yeah. I purchased 3 plume poppy plants.
Oh, I love those.
It was beautiful last year. I bought them from a yard sale. And nobody at the yard sale told me that they kind of sprout up past where I planted them. Now, I planted them on the border right by a split rail fence bordering my neighbor's property. And the ground is mounded a little bit, but I have a feeling it's going to be naughty and go into my neighbor's yard. Where can I plant it or how can I control it?
Mm-hmm.
It's right next to the split rail fence. This little raised area is right next to where I'm trying to grow a prairie.
Yeah, I love plume poppy, but they need a lot of space. Beautiful plants. They get 8 to 12 feet tall. As you found out, they run. I had somebody one time tell me, you know, there's a reason you find plants at garage sales.
Yeah.
Usually they're plants that grow and spread and people dig and divide. And so, I love it. I wanted to put some, you know, it really needs to be a place you've got plenty of room or where you can get in with a good sharp shovel and just cut through those rhizomes. Edging will slow it down, but it won't stop them because they're pretty deep rooted. A friend of mine, if you don't mind using total vegetation killers, would often round up vigorous plants like this one, but he would take an edger, cut around the area he wanted to keep, and then treat the outside area. Because if you treat the outside edge, you will damage some of those in the center. Now, there got to be a point when it was so big he didn't care, and usually enough survived. But, you know, I think give it a plenty of room. I'm looking at the size of the studio going, this is probably what those three plants will easily fill in, you know, like a 10 by 10 area.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. That's what I'm maybe 10 by 12.
Maybe 10 by 12. Yeah. So, you know, you might want to just give it either give it room, get rid of it now because you don't want to deal with it, or put it someplace where you could either till, you know, if you till it, you're going to be propagating it, but till it and then remove those rhizomes, edge it, or do some kind of physical removal of the plants that are spreading. You know, edging, you know, 18 inches deep is going to slow it down, but boy, it's a lot of work for a plant. Yeah. And I love that plant, but, yeah, you know, it needs room to grow. And thanks for being a nice neighbor. So, you know, your neighbors will really are very lucky to have you worried about what's going into their yard.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for calling. You know, we had some questions about corn gluten and where to get it. And Teresa in Madison shot us a note and said you can buy corn gluten at feed mills like the farm market in Oregon or any of the other feed mills, probably.
Right. And I'm not sure in terms of if it's corn gluten in the same formulation and concentration that you would be using for something labeled for that use. So, and all I know gardeners are doing that. So I couldn't tell you quantity and how to use it and the formulation. So that's just something to be aware of. And whoever's selling it should be able to help you if it is usable on for weed control. But thank you for sharing that.
And Julie emailed us, says, I just moved in and the garden used to be mainly flowers. It was overgrown. We pulled the big stuff out. Can we just rototill the rest and just add some soil? And what kind of soil should we add for veggies?
You know, one of the things, if you had good plant growth, even good weed growth, your soil's probably okay if you've got good flower growth yet. If it's all weeds, then you may need to do a little bit of amending. There's a couple things you can do. You know, you can, if you've got a lot of weeds growing and you till it up, things like quackgrass and bindweed and creeping charlie, you're propagating them. So that's the downside. If you don't mind using a total vegetation killer, you could treat first, let that die, maybe wait a while, see if it sprouts up and take it off. You could slice it off, you know, just get a sod cutter if it's a dense thing of flowers and weeds. Add some compost to it. You can do some solarizing, most effective in the summer where you cover your garden with 6 to 8 inches, or sorry, for 6 to 8 weeks with clear. Larry's looking at me like, what? Cover with clear plastic for 6 to 8 weeks and you cook it, but you probably want to get started this spring. So, you know, either removing the weeds, if you till them, you're going to have more to contend with, but work in some compost, mulch the soil. I use shredded leaves. I always have them in my area. Marsh hay is hard to get. Those don't have the weed seeds that will thrive in our soil. But if you can get a weed-free source of some kind of mulch that's organic, evergreen needles, if you've got a lot of evergreens on your property, would work great too. So mulching will help suppress those weed seeds, and then continually pulling. Controlling your weeds before planting's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's easiest in the long run. Short term, not so much. But yeah, if you can get rid of them, knock down those weeds first, then add your compost, you'll have a lot more success later on.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You know, I just felt a little buzz. I got a text, and we were talking about lime trees earlier.
Right.
And I said I hadn't ordered mine yet. And there was a text from my wife who says, yeah, where's my lime tree?
Good job, Renee. Maybe you should do a mass order. I think we could take care of a lot of people. Me, was it Steve that called earlier? You'll be happier. We may need you nudging us all along.
Oh, man. Virginia and West Allis. Let's go to you. Hi, Virginia.
Oh, hi. I was on speaker, but not
right. Oh, okay.
Hi.
I love the idea of the corn gluten.
Yep.
I moved into a new house to me last year, and it has daffodils or jonquils popping up all over the place. So if I put the corn gluten on, am I going to kill those kind of things?
Check the label to see, you know, anything that kills plants can have an adverse effect. This is a pre-emerge. Yeah. It's a pre-emergent, so it shouldn't be a problem.
So it's but more for the seeds than it is for leafy things.
Correct.
There.
Correct. Ah. So check the label, and you want to make sure your timing is right, because if you get them after they've germinated, because it's got some nitrogen in it, you'll have more robust weeds than you did before. So I've had a few gardeners tell me lawns are usually a little easier because you've got grass in there to compete with it, but it's a pre-emergent, so you know, it's just, you shouldn't have a problem with the bulbs, but always check the label just to make sure that there's no other kind of bizarre thing that could happen. But it's a good, you can use it with different plants as long as you're not planting seeds and then applying it. So check the label if there's any phytotoxic, you know, plant toxicity related to certain species. It'll have it on the label for you. So should be good. And I know the daffodils are great, but sometimes the weeds are equally assertive. So good luck.
That's right. I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We had an email from Doris in Bonduel who says, is it possible to still move or transplant rhubarb plants?
You know, a little earlier would have been better, but rhubarb's pretty tough. But if you move it now, you're not going to really want to take anything for a harvest. So, you know, I've moved rhubarb, I think, any month of the growing season, just because I had to move it and had success. It's not the best thing for you and the plant. So, yes, you could still move it. I wouldn't harvest it this year. Make sure it gets good post-transplant care. I just like a spring transplant better. Some people will do it in the fall, but, you know, at least it's got time to root in and do better. So you just, you know, sacrifice the harvest this spring.
And Lynn, along those lines, wondered why her rhubarb, she's in Minnesota, why her rhubarb is coming up stunted this year. They apply wood ash and composted horse manure over the winter, and the plants look healthy. They're just very small compared to past years.
You know, this, I've had some complaints on plants being, you know, we had the warm weather, so some things are long, and then we had cold, and I think that fluctuating temperatures, one of the things with wood ash to be careful with is it's very alkaline. So when you add it to sweet soils, depending on your soil pH, you don't want to add it like in southern Wisconsin, not good. Here, not a problem, because it tends to be like a lime on your soil. So it's better to throw it in the compost bin. I think it's more responsive to the weather. If it doesn't pop out of that, then what I would recommend is get a soil test, make sure it's not missing something, and making sure it's growing in full sun too for best results. It'll take shade, but you'll have better growth in full sun.
Yeah. And Larry in the Milwaukee area, I believe, was wondering if you could tell him anything about the new reblooming lilacs. Are they hardy in Milwaukee? He says they stay in, he's told they stay in shrub size, maybe 4 to 5 feet max.
Yeah.
And how often do they rebloom? Is this?
I have one on my porch. I couldn't resist. I'm one of those people that, you know, spends the extra money to get the first year because I'm kind of crazy. Mine's still in a pot because I can't, the best place to grow it in ground is in the front yard. So I'm leaving it in a container on my patio. So it's overwintered in a pot. I've insulated the pot with other plants around it. Blooms in the spring, light fragrance. Oh, wonderful.
Oh.
Mine's budded up right now. Repeats bloom usually August time frame. Last year I did a little deadheading after the first flush of bloom, and that seemed to help stimulate more flowers later. I need to transplant mine into a slightly bigger pot because I think that's where it's going to live. The prices come down. You know, that first couple years, they take advantage of us suckers.
Yeah, you pay through
you
the
do.
Nose.
But it's a wonderful, wonderful plant. I love lilacs. I have a small yard, so I wanted one that I could enjoy the bloom several times. So I've talked to other gardeners who are having equally good success.
And they smell great.
They smell wonderful. Light fragrance, 4 to 5 feet tall and wide, so much smaller scale plant.
But now you've got yours sort of inside, so you're not getting a lot of sun there.
Oh, it's outside in a container. It's outside in a container. So it's made it through the winter outside in a pot.
You.
Thanks for asking. I didn't explain that well. No, so mine's outside in full sun on my patio, which is my best, sunniest spot in my yard. So, full sun for best results and also for rebloom ability, okay, too. And then I think a little deadheading is going to definitely help. So, you know, and they're small, so you could get out there and clip a few of those faded blooms, just the bloom,
yeah,
and then you'll get a rebloom. The first year I didn't even do any deadheading. Last year I did a little and seemed to really push a little more bloom in that second phase.
Okay.
So enjoy. They're really cool.
Well, let's turn to Mary Lou in Greene County. Hi, Mary Lou.
How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I've got to tell you, I love impatiens. I have a lot of shady areas, and I love to put impatiens everywhere. So I decided this year I was going to start impatiens from seeds.
Okay.
I tried really hard. I got the, you know, seed starter mix. I get them going, planted them very carefully so they weren't covered. I put them on a little warming pad so they had a little heat on their bottom, just a little bit of heat. I mean, I baby these things. And out of the 30 seeds, I probably got 8 of them to sprout. And when they sprouted, they came up and they grew so slowly, very slowly, and I would miss them and put them back in their little heating pads, and then they all died.
A couple things. Impatiens are, one, take a long time to germinate, as you found out. They're slow to grow, and that's why they're started much earlier in the greenhouses than, you know, things like zinnias and petunias and things. So they're usually started very early in the year or late the previous year to get them going, germinating, and up and growing. The seeds, as you found out, are small, so you might even want to get pelleted seeds, so that kind of helps managing it. When they go up, when you're planting, starting plants from seeds, it sounds like you did everything right. But for everybody else that may have had issues, if your seeds grow and suddenly wilt and die, it's damping off. And starting with clean containers, sterile seed starting mix, you know, making sure you're not contaminating the soil with that fungus is your best results. You did everything right. It's a tough crop. Lights help. So hopefully you're keeping your lights 4 to 6 inches above the top of the plant, because that more light, the more energy, the better that plant's going to grow. So heat helps with germination, and then the light is also important once they're up and growing. So yeah. I think you did everything right. You know, impatiens, there aren't a lot of people that grow them from seeds.
Just so be patient with your impatiens.
Yeah.
Well, I've got two parent plants that I kept from last summer, and I've been taking cuttings, and the cuttings have been taking off like crazy.
Excellent. Yeah.
But what really frustrates me is underneath the parent plants, I have got a whole bunch of babies coming up that I didn't do anything with. I didn't baby them. I didn't miss them. I didn't do anything
with
them.
You know, I was talking to the group last night, and we were talking about gardens, and I said, you know, one of the things one of my professors told me many years ago is plants don't read the directions. And, you know, sometimes you do everything wrong and it works, and sometimes you do everything right and it doesn't. And I think that's nature's way of telling us who's in charge.
So,
I think you did everything right. I think, you know, I transplant some of those babies from under the parents.
I'm hoarding every single thing.
And just tell everybody you plan for that magical experience of surprise, whatever they look like when they grow and bloom.
You know, I've got to tell a little story. This is years and years back when my brother was very small or little. My dad had planted a pine of some sort. I don't even remember what it was anymore. But anyway, it was not living, and he just got mad, and he pulled it out and threw it away. Well, my little brother had a sandbox, so he took it over to the sandbox, and he just stuck it in the sandbox. And, of course, then it started going.
You know, it is. It's always sometimes the harder you try, the worse it works. And I think plants thrive despite us or to spite us. I'm not sure.
Oh, man. Thank you very much for calling. Yeah, appreciate the call. And we have more callers online, but let's take a Facebook question from Laura. Can you suggest the best way to re-energize the soil in her perennial gardens? All the plants are looking good, but the beds are established. I'm sure the soil is depleted. The beds are English garden style. They're very densely planted. So what do you do there?
You know, one of the things that they've found with research through the Perennial Plant Association is top dressing. Put an inch or so of compost over the soil surface. So that's a great thing to do either in the fall. If you clean up your garden, I leave mine stand for the winter. So after you do your cleanup in late winter, early spring, you usually can get some compost around and sprinkle that on the soil surface. You can help further get that compost by the roots by doing doing vertical mulching. So get an auger like you use for planting bulbs on your cordless drill and drill some spots in between the plants to get that compost down in the root zone. And that's something else you can do. If your plants are good and healthy, just by doing some top dressing every other year or so, you're going to be amazed at the difference. The earthworms, the beetles, all those, you know, ground insects will help get it down to the roots. And sounds like you're doing everything right, and that'll just keep it good and healthy. And then, you know, when you dig and divide, that's always your chance to help amend the soil as well.
There you go. Bob and Jackson will turn to you next. Thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi.
And just a real quick aside, Melinda, you were in the West Bend News in the gardening section, a photograph clearly posed, professionally shot, and you were looking really sharp.
Yeah, you'll be disappointed if you come see me next weekend. I look like the real Melinda, let me tell you. Dirt under my nails.
I've met you in person down at the State Fair. I think after one of your presentations, we bumped into each other. We were looking at pies in the pies or cakes or something like that.
You know, busted out. What can I say?
you didn't look too bad then. So anyway, service berries.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. I now have a family that raves about Bob's new pie from last summer.
Yeah. Excellent.
And can't wait until this summer. The question is this. I started out these things thinking that service berries were a tree, and I was pruning and pruning and pruning. Well, now I've got a couple of them that are looking like bushes, but I've got a couple that have about a 4-inch trunk right in the middle with maybe a half dozen, 3/4 of a dozen inch stems coming out from around it. And that main trunk in there with as high as it's gotten, I mean, I can't get the berries without a ladder.
Okay.
And I'm really not great on a ladder.
Me neither. So I hear you.
What I was wondering is if I was real careful, can I just get in there and cut, if I can get, you know, an angle at it, and cut that main trunk right out of there and just leave the rest of the bush around the rest of the stems around the, you know, the bottom of the trunk?
Are you getting flowers and fruit? Some of our ornamental plants are grafted, and so they're put. I've actually seen, believe it or not, a mountain ash used as a graft with a service berry. Really,
is
kind
that
of
right?
Yeah, when I was teaching it at MATC, so I don't know where that came from. Usually they're on their own rootstock, but if you've got those suckers, if they're flowering like the main stem, then yes, you could train it to be a bush. For anybody considering doing service berry, Ulmifolia and Laevis are some of the shorter varieties, because you're right, there are some tree types. I have a Princess Diana that's probably 20 feet tall in front of my house. Mm. So the birds get the upper fruit.
Yeah.
I get the lower ones.
Okay.
You know, I'm just kind of sharing that way. So, you know, if you add any more, you might want to look for some of the smaller ones. But if the outer stems are flowering for you and producing fruit, then yes, you could take that main stem out. One of the things that I've used that I really find works well is a Sawzall. And you can get a pruning blade or just a narrow, strong blade. Because when you're pruning out that big trunk, all those little stems are really close by. And I find it tough to get a pruner, a regular pruning saw, in there without damaging
the
others.
Rest of it, yeah.
Yeah. And we have some service berries at the State Fair Energy Park where I work, and you've seen those too. And I did some thinning on those, and they're looking really good. And last year they were fruiting when we did some cleanup, so we ate our way through the garden. But those are smaller scale. I think those are the Laevis, so they're going to be a little bit smaller scale. So yeah, as long as those outer stems are flowering and fruiting and look true, it's a tough thing to do. But you know, if you're doing them for the fruit, you need to keep them where you can pick them. Or else, you know, use that as a tree and then put some shrub forms in for you and leave the big ones to the birds.
Well, right now I've got, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 6, 7. I've got 7 of them, so I'm not going to be doing any more planting.
Okay.
No.
That's not a bad idea. I was thinking about the tip of my electric chainsaw.
Okay, that might be a little too aggressive. You might take the whole thing down and start from scratch, and that could work too. But maybe the sawzall will be a little bit better choice.
Might be better, Bob. Take care of yourself, and thank you very much for calling. And boy, Melinda, here's 90 minutes went in a hurry, didn't it?
It did. It's always fun, and it was so nice to be in the studio with you. And here in Eau Claire, it's just a beautiful space. Oh. And like you said, the folks here are really wonderful.
They're great people. The listeners here are wonderful, and so are all the folks who work here at the our Eau Claire station. It's really a lot of fun to have them with us. And I certainly thank you for listening. Don't forget, help us make One Day Wednesday a success by making your gift early. We have 500 early pledges. That's our magic number. So I hope you'll give now and track our progress at WPR.org. And lots come Monday. We'll have Bassam Shakashiri talking science and our weather guys. And thank you for listening. And stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.